A show of unity across the country as thousands of students left their classrooms again to demand stricter gun laws. The second nationwide walkout of the year Friday marked the 19th anniversary of the Columbine Massacre, where 12 students and a teacher were shot dead. Students from Washington to Indianapolis and Chicago to Allen, Texas, rallied for change.
He collaborated with such megastars as Madonna and Coldplay. On Friday, fans of electronic dance music shocked at the death of Swedish DJ Avicii at age 28, his EDM work winning him several American Music Awards and MTV Europe Awards. Avicii died in Oman's capital of Muscat. No cause of death was given. His publicist saying, quote, the family is devastated.
Strange disconnect happening in the gold market as geopolitical concerns are not really causing prices to jump as high as tradition would dictate. Gold is up more than 3% this year, boosted by sanctions against Russia, a possible U.S.-China trade war, and volatility in equities. But as Standard Chartered Bank's Suki Cooper tells me, gold has yet to break out of a tight trading range because markets continue to anticipate rising U.S. interest rates.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's April 23rd, 5:10 in the morning. Happy to have you here with us for another business week getting underway and another business day. Today on the broadcast, a little bit later in the show, Alan Adamson will be here. He's the author of Shift Ahead, How the Best Companies Stay Relevant in a Fast-Changing World. He has some advice in that area for us coming up in our second segment. It is CEO Spotlight Monday, and John Simpson is here. He's the CEO of One North. But first, we begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures are off about 49 points this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower as well. Crude oil is trading at $68 a barrel, which is down about 40 cents. Around the globe this morning, markets are generally lower in Europe, with the London market, the only market there that's up just a little bit. Now it's gone negative. Everything negative now in Europe. The DAX in Germany off about 29 points for a quarter percent. The CAC in France is down about 10, almost, well, let's say 0.2% now. And also in Asia, markets are lower, with the Nikkei off about 74 points, down about a third. The Hang Seng is off about 0.5%. And the Shanghai is down a few points as well. A couple of stories that we're watching for you this morning. The International Monetary Fund's Policymaking Committee says a strong world economy is threatened by increasing tension over trade and a heavy global debt load. Officials say longer-term prospects are clouded by sluggish productivity growth and aging populations in wealthy countries. America's business economists are sketching a bright picture for the coming months, with a survey finding that more of their companies foresee rising sales and expect to continue hiring and raising pay. At the same time, nearly two-thirds of respondents in the latest survey for the National Association of Business Economics says President Trump's tax cuts, which were promoted as likely to spur hiring and investment, have not affected their plans. The survey appears to suggest that instead that the economy's momentum is being driven primarily by solid growth worldwide and by the nearly nine-year-old U.S. expansion from the depths of the Great Recession. It is CEO Spotlight Monday, and we're very happy to have with us John Simpson this morning. He's the CEO at One North. John, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you here this morning. We're going to talk a little bit about leadership and branding. Let's first tell people what One North is all about.
Happy to do that. One North is an agency that helps large professional service brands. So think large law firms, investment banks, consulting firms, architecture, engineering, construction, accounting. We help those organizations really do three things, and that's drive revenue, create client stickiness, and attract, grow, and retain talent. And we do that by bringing together brand, creative, technology, and user experience skill sets.
So what would be a couple of your clients? Would we recognize them?
Absolutely. There's a number of clients here in Chicago, but certainly the ones that people would recognize are Baker McKenzie, Navigant, that's based here in Chicago as well, Sidley Austin, Plant Moran, a wide variety of accounting, law firms, consulting organizations.
You said something there in the opening that I hadn't heard before, the term client stickiness. What's that?
Client stickiness. Well, let's start back and talk about most organizations, typically from a marketing and sales perspective, are always thinking about how to get their next client. And while that's critically important, they oftentimes neglect the clients that they have today. And so what we help organizations do is think about how to use digital and how to use offline activities to create client stickiness and really develop a relationship that keeps that client with them over the long term. Because as we all know, it's a heck of a lot less expensive to keep a client than go out and attract a new one.
Yeah, I was doing a little research on you before you came in, and I saw a blog post that you did where you said one of the key focuses is understanding your client's client. That seems to be a big deal.
Absolutely. And I will never forget one of the points in my career during business school. I had a professor who asked a group full of MBA candidates, he said, what is marketing really about? And while he got a number of interesting answers, he came back and gave us his version of it. And that was, the role of marketing is to understand the customer. And if you understand the customer, everything that comes from that, whether it be the creative, the advertising, the messaging, it's all going to be on point. But it all starts with that really, really deep understanding of who the customer is.
How do you do that? I mean, how do you get to know them that well? Do you spend time with them? Do you go camp out at their houses? I mean, how does that come about?
Well, that's actually not far from the truth. In fact, a really good marketing and branding campaign starts with an understanding of who the customer is, which means going and spending time with them and really asking the difficult questions to understand what keeps them up at night. I think oftentimes where branding and marketing efforts fail is when organizations have the hubris to think they really know their customer when maybe they haven't talked to them in the right way in a while. So continually talking to your customers on a regular basis and asking those difficult questions, asking how they see you, how they see your competitors, what keeps them up at night. These are the things that really create a good brand out of a customer insight.
How challenging is this space, the digital marketing space? Is it, and two, how different is it than, let's say, 10 years ago?
The digital marketing space is exploding, and it's super exciting for a variety of reasons. Versus 10 years ago, I think we've seen social really come of its own. I mean, you look at just last week, we had Mark Zuckerberg in a suit in front of Congress. You never see that. You never would have expected that 10 years ago. But I think it really shows how far digital marketing has come. I mean, this is now on the collective conscience. Not only what digital marketing and digital can do for organizations, but also how should digital marketing and what it should mean to us as people that use the internet.
Yeah, and seeing Mark Zuckerberg in something other than a t-shirt too was kind of exciting.
I was fairly shocked.
And so on that subject, and when people who are out there, not your clients or people who are using this, hear digital marketing, there's a bit of fear after this Facebook thing that's come into their heads. It's like, well, how am I being caught up in this from a consumer standpoint? What can you say? How would you address their concerns?
Absolutely. You know, I would like to say that anybody who's concerned about how their information is being used on the web is to start by thinking about really, you know, how would you walk down the street and would you carry a billboard with all of your personal information out there for everyone to see? And the answer is no. And so the reality is that you are responsible for the information that you put out there. So do it wisely, right? Don't submit highly private information over unsecured networks. Don't broadcast information that shouldn't be out there and expect that information is going to be out there in perpetuity. In fact, this is the same advice that I give my young kids. I say, look, don't put anything on the internet that you don't expect to be there in 30 years.
The other stuff, though, that our day-to-day lives that we share on, you know, marketing, on social media, some of that, though, is important to the job you do, isn't it? I mean, what if everybody stopped putting stuff on the internet and blocking all of their stuff from going anywhere? That could be a negative effect on you, wouldn't it?
You know, I think to some extent it would be, but people are going to share what they're going to share, and everyone has that level of comfort that they have. And my advice to everyone is to find that level of comfort for you, understand what privacy means, understand the tools that you're using, whether it be Facebook or LinkedIn and otherwise, and really understand those privacy settings so that you can adjust and share what you really want to share. And then on the other side of the coin, organizations that use that information will only be able to use what you provide.
When you do interviews for hiring people, again, this back to the thing that I researched about you online, you were talking about how you like to ask the question of potential new employees, their strengths versus their capabilities. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, one of my favorite interview questions is definitely, give me an example of a strength and give me an example of a capability. And so a strength is, or a capability is something we can do. So I might be capable of being, say, a project manager. But a strength is also a capability, but the catch is that it's something that actually gets you out of bed in the morning, right? So for me, it might not be project management. I can do project management. That's a capability. But you really want to find the strength, which is not only that capability, but something that's really going to drive that person and encourage them to get out of bed every single morning.
Speaking of that, do you have a routine as a CEO that you go through every day?
I really do. I'm definitely a creature of habit, and it starts waking up in the morning, and the first thing I do after having a cup of coffee is to review my emails and look at the day's news and then plan out my day based on the schedule that that is in front of me.
Are you an early riser or a late riser?
Well, I'm definitely an early riser, given the fact that I have two young children. So that's not necessarily by choice, but it's something that's become reality for me.
How important at One North is ethics and having sort of a soul? And we've been talking about this a lot here in the opening bell. Especially millennials want to go work for a company that they feel is doing the right thing. How important is that at One North?
Having a ethics and what you stand for is critically important at One North. In fact, we had a really unique opportunity, Steve. About 6 years ago, we founded One North in a spin-out from a large publicly traded company. And when we did that, we had a chance to sit down and think through what were the guiding principles that we wanted to guide us, not only in the way we operated with our clients, but also the way that we treated talent. And today, those same five guiding principles are as important as they were the day that we launched the business. And I think that's really important. And it also is something that helps us advise our clients. We're often talking with our clients about developing their talent brand. And their talent brand really starts with an understanding of who they are and that commitment they're going to make to their, in the case of talent, to their employees.
What would the five guiding principles be? What do you tell folks?
Yeah, so the five guiding principles, I'll start at the top, are going for the extraordinary. So doing extraordinary work always. Trusting in collaboration. A courage to say yes. We all know it's a lot easier to say no oftentimes than it is to say yes. No means no more work and I can just sort of wipe my hands of something, but yes means that I'm going to take this on and take responsibility and accountability for it. Being forward thinking, so not just answering the question that's in front of you, but thinking beyond that question. And the last, I think this really speaks to the ethics question that you just asked, Steve, is do the right thing. You know, I can't, certainly as a professional service organization, I can't be in every interaction that our folks have with each other and with our clients. So if I can hire the right people and give them that simple principle, which is to do the right thing, then 9 times out of 10, I am going to have a satisfactory outcome in any interaction that they have.
And when you hear feedback from folks that work for you, what do they say about these things? Do they give you positive feedback or do they have something else to say?
They give lots of feedback, Steve. And I think what's so interesting about anytime you're developing a talent brand is to recognize that it's something that's evolving all the time. And it's also something that requires constant care and feeding. So I hear oftentimes where we're achieving our objectives as it relates to our guiding principles. But I also hear, and I think this is important, when we're not, and we're maybe not living up to our guiding principles. And I always like to encourage anybody who works at One North to seek out their manager, seek out me, if they feel in any case that we aren't living those principles that are so important. So it really requires constant vigilance.
We love when CEOs come in because it gives us a chance to ask questions. We read a lot of headlines about what the situation is like, the business climate, business optimism, that sort of thing. But I'd like to ask you, what do you see out there? Are you optimistic about where we are from an economic standpoint, from all of the other standpoints?
Yeah, I am absolutely excited about where we're going from a market perspective. But at the same time, I think everybody, there's a hint of caution. And I think a lot of it has to do with the way that we experienced 2007 and 2008. There's a lot of irrational exuberance. Things were going almost too well, and we didn't recognize it. So this time around, when I talk to other CEOs, other business operators, when I talk to my clients, everyone's saying, yeah, things are going great, and we're going to take advantage of it. But there's also this piece of them that's saying, but I'm also planning for a contingency as well.
Is there a geographical difference in the concern? For instance, do companies feel different in New York than they would in Chicago about that?
generally speaking, One North works with clients across the nation. Mm-hmm. While we might be based in Chicago, actually only about 15 to 20% of our revenue comes from here. So we actually work with this national client base. And I have not seen that the perspective changes based on the location at this point, at least using my client set as the data set.
What about staffing levels and personnel jobs? We're hearing a lot about the job market is full, that we're at full employment. What are you finding in the area?
Well, I just read recently, Steve, that 61% of CEOs say that their organizations are not recruiting fast enough or well enough. So that really tells you how tight the labor market is right now. And I think there are some other dynamics going on that are extremely interesting. So, those would be the fact that today it's much easier to be an entrepreneur than it was, say, 20 years ago when I started my career. The number of people that are seeking self-employment has risen dramatically as well, because it's fairly easy with the internet and digital to hang your shingle and actually receive work. But also at the same time, it's much easier to be a passive candidate for a job, right? All I have to do is create a LinkedIn profile, even if I'm not looking for a job, and I will get job offers. So what this means for CEOs is that we're constantly focusing on recruiting, because not only do you have to bring new people in a tight labor market, but you also have to be worried about the folks that you have.
From the perspective of me, the job seeker, and this is probably valuable for people who might be out there in that position listening right now, what can we do to market ourselves better so that we get on your radar screen?
Well, definitely start your social media profile. Put the information out there that you feel comfortable sharing and start to build a brand for yourself. When you start to build a brand for yourself, that's when we start to notice the type of person that you are. And so specifically, if you've got work product, if you've got thought leadership that you can put out on the internet, if you've got opinions that are relevant and well thought out, I highly encourage you to share those because those are the things that really QR interest when we're out there looking for candidates.
And then from the employer's standpoint, can they do anything to combat either of the things that you've talked about?
From an employer standpoint, I think what they're really doing today, and when you talk to HR professionals, something like 87% of them are now saying that recruiting is now becoming more and more like marketing, because they're realizing in a tight labor market that they have to really go out there and create awareness more than they ever have before. They've got to have a fantastic recruiting experience that is on par with some of the best experiences that are out there. And they got to have a great, I would call it a post-purchase experience. So once talent actually joins their organization, they have to then provide that fantastic experience for those employees, and then allow those employees to go out and tell the story to other job seekers. So today, those HR professionals are really part marketer, I would say.
Interested, too, in your take on Amazon. Here, Chicago is one of the communities, one of the cities vying for the headquarters, and potentially 50,000 people coming here to work, new jobs here. What would that do to Chicago?
Amazon coming to Chicago would be absolutely fantastic. We've got a vibrant digital scene here in Chicago. We've got 1871, Technology Association, et cetera. But Amazon coming to Chicago, I think, would really put us on the map from a digital perspective and show that we're a real player. And then we can play between the coasts, between, of course, Silicon Valley and Boston and New York, mm-hmm. and so forth. So it would be absolutely fantastic if Amazon would come to Chicago.
In the secret society of CEOs, have you heard anything? Have you got your ear to the ground? Is there any rumble of rumor or anything?
I have not heard anything, nor would I say it if I had, Steve.
Fair enough. Where do you see One North in 5 years, 10 years down the road?
What we see going on right now in our industry is really fascinating, especially given where I started my career. You have big advertising and creative agencies that are now becoming more consultancies and technologists. You have big technology companies, big technology consulting companies like in Accenture that are now buying creative and brand organizations. What I love about One North, and really where I see our future, is really combining brand, creative, and technology in a way that achieves business outcomes for our clients. And so what I see in the future is an organization that looks a whole lot like an agency, but a lot like a consulting firm. And I'm really excited about that.
And do you see 10, maybe 20 years down the road, all of the human resources being human and not robotic? Or are we going to see more robot workers coming online? And how's that going to impact what you do?
There's no question that with the advent of artificial intelligence, with bots, automation, and so forth, that things are going to change. I mean, I often wonder with my two young boys what the job market is going to look like for them. What career am I preparing them for 20 years down the road? But I don't think it's necessarily something that people should be concerned about, because that will create additional jobs that we might not be aware of now. And so, yes, it will shift. I think that a lot will be automated, but there is always the necessity for that human touch.
And educating the workforce, there's been some discussion about this, too, in recent years, about whether or not a college degree is really necessary anymore, that perhaps a community college or even, what's the word I'm looking for, where you work, not necessarily get a degree, but you get the work life experience or the work study experience. Do you think college is still important and will be important moving forward?
So that's a really interesting conversation to have, because there are a lot of folks that say, hey, you know, these days when training is so readily accessible via the internet and so forth, I can train for a specific job and go directly into that job. I think for certain types of jobs, that is totally okay and that's fine. And maybe a 4-year college degree doesn't make sense. But I think, and obviously I'm biased, having a college degree, that it does provide you with a way of thinking and a way of problem solving that, if done right and if educated right, becomes really valuable in the business context.
I was surprised to see your education background. Correct me if I'm wrong here, economics and neuropsychology?
That is correct. I get that question a lot. So I like to say that that I went into neuropsychology because I found it very interesting. However, if you're going to go into that field, you really need a graduate degree. So I got economics because I needed a job as soon as I graduated from college. So that's why I have the double degree.
Yeah. Have either of those, how have they helped you in your current situation?
You know, interestingly enough, there's more overlap than you'd think. While economics and the business acumen is important, I think the part that is oftentimes lacking in business people is that empathetic part and that psychological part and understanding how to read people and how people think. And so I found over the years, particularly as my career has moved into management, that that's a really, really valuable skill set to have.
Yeah. We should make sure I'm clear here. That was a bachelor's degree. You do have an MBA from Kellogg, which is one of our wonderful locals of marketing and business schools here. How has all of the jobs you have in the past prepared you for the CEO work that you're doing now?
Yeah, what's so interesting about my career is that I've spent the entire 20 years of my career in professional services. That's both serving professional service organizations as my clients, but also working in professional service organizations. And when I look back at my career, I started my career at a Chicago-based company. It was called Anderson Consulting. It's now called Accenture. And at that time, they would take legions of college kids, this is the mid-90s, off the college campus, and they would put you through 3 weeks of training in Chicago or wherever your home office was around the world. And then they'd take everybody from around the world after those 3 weeks, and they'd put you at St. Charles. And so you had all of these, you know, thousands of young folks coming to St. Charles for training. And they train you on everything from how to dress in a business setting to how to conduct a meeting to how to be a good consultant and use their methodology. And when I fast forward 20 years down the road to running a professional service organization, I look back at the way that they were able to scale themselves through that training program and create this massive organization that added value for their clients. And I say that was pretty smart, because that's one of the most difficult things to do in business is scale your business. It's easy to create a business that's focused around one person, but if you can create a business that that lives when you're not there, then you've definitely created a scaled organization that's creating value. And that's what Accenture taught me, and it's really valuable today at One North.
As a CEO, is it enriching for you to still be able to go out and speak to organizations, and also you're an author, you write as well. How important are those to your daily life as a CEO?
I think the most important thing for a CEO, and this is certainly my opinion, is that you have to be out in front of customers. I got advice early in my career. One of my bosses said to me, he said, John, never get too far away from the customer. You can oftentimes, and I see this with a lot of CEOs, become burdened with the financials and burdened with the strategy. But it's my opinion that all those things flow from that deep understanding of the customer. And so my philosophy is always to try and be out there not only with customers, but also the talent within One North.
How does the current political climate affect what you do at One North? Depending on, you know, which side of the fence you are politically, there could be a conversation in the office that goes one way versus the other. And then we have the Me Too movement and also the Time's Up movement. How are these things affecting your life and your company?
Yeah, from a political perspective, I'd say there really hasn't been much of an impact other than the fact that I think that there is a lot of volatility in the marketplace and some of that hedging that I talked about earlier that we're seeing within our client base and even ourselves, because we don't always know what's going to happen day to day. I will say things like the Me Too movement, GDPR, which is a global data protection regulation that's going on in Europe, Facebook being called to the carpet. Mm-hmm. These things are critically important in our business, and every CEO should be taking note of these things and have a plan for addressing these things. And if they don't have a plan, or even if they do, readdressing them on a regular basis. But they're having a huge impact.
And the effort by workers to sort of have more of a say in their company seems to be something different than it was 5 or 10 or 15 years ago.
Absolutely. I found that when I graduated from college and when I went to work in my first career, I think my father gave me the advice that was basically shut up, be a sponge, and learn as much as you can. And while that might have been okay back then, I think what we're finding today is that particularly the folks that are entering the workforce now, the younger workers, they want to have a say from day one, and they want to have input, and they want to make an impact. And I think that that's fantastic. Interesting sidebar story on that. One day I came into the office, this is about 4 years ago, and I saw some of our new hires talking to somebody that was wearing a suit, and they were having a very serious meeting. And I asked, well, are there clients in the office today? And I was told, no, there's no clients in the office today. Well, then, you know, why are those new guys meeting with that person in the suit? And somebody said, oh, that's the coffee committee. I said, well, what the heck is the coffee committee? And what I learned was this young group of folks off campus had decided that the coffee that we were serving was not up to their standards, and they took it upon themselves to go out and actually interview people that could bring in better coffee. Nice. I love that.
And were they immediately promoted to the corner office?
I'm not so sure, but yeah. We did get better coffee.
John, it's wonderful meeting you, and all the best to you and everybody at One North.
Thank you, Steve. Enjoy being here.
John Simpson is the CEO of One North, founder of as well as One North. You can find them online at onenorth.com and also follow on Twitter at One North. We're going to continue our conversation with John after the bell this morning and post more of our conversation in the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later this morning at WGNRadio.com.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoNO.com. Promise Hummus, a new Chicago-made clean-label, gluten-free and high-protein hummus that hit the market in March, is enhanced with whey protein. It comes in four flavors and can be found at Jewel Osco locations. Microsoft announced a partnership with Chicago startup Lightstream. Through its Twitch competitor Mixer, Microsoft will use Lightstream to let streamers customize their channels with images, overlays, transitions, and text. Lightstream, a Techstars Chicago grad, has raised $1.8 million in venture funding to date. That's today's InO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. You know, some companies have no problem evolving to meet the times and marketplace, but for others, not so much. How do the best companies do it? Stay relevant in this fast-changing world? Alan Adamson is here. He's the author of Shift Ahead, How the Best Companies Stay Relevant in a Fast-Changing World. He's also the co-founder and managing partner of Metaforce. Alan, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Pleasure to be here, Steve. Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. Is there a special sauce? Is it in the DNA? Is it in the genes? How do they do it?
Well, yeah, the unfortunate fact is we interviewed over 100 organizations, big, small, private, public, and most fell. There are many, many more ways to fail to shift ahead than there are. There's no magic, wake up in the morning, have your orange juice, and you're going to shift ahead. Unfortunately.
Yeah, right. If it were that easy. So what are we talking about here when we talk about the failure? Is it lack of vision? Is it the inability to manage a group or all of the above?
Well, it starts off with some things that are constraints that are imagined to some extent. We're all creatures of habit, and the familiar is comfortable. If we're all sitting in, from that old TV show, Frasier's, we're all sitting in Marty Crane's chair. So we wake up every day, and we're on cruise control. We do what we did yesterday. We're the more comfortable with what we did yesterday. And so one of it is human nature, realizing that when you wake up and get to the office, you're already in the end zone. You're already in, you know, you're already in trouble. So starting every day fresh, trying to get out of your bubble. Most people live in a bubble. You know, we've talked about that in many, many settings. But those common things are important. Then there's some business challenges that we all must overcome.
We talk a lot here in the opening bell about disruption. I'm guessing that you've got to be able to spot the things coming and know when it's time to reinvent. Is that fair?
That's a big one. And we describe that as most businesses play too much tennis and not enough golf, and I'll explain what I mean. I'm terrible at both games, but when I'm trying to be better at tennis, I'm preoccupied on where my opponent is. I'm trying to hit the ball to where they're not. When I'm playing golf badly, you know, I really don't care who I'm playing with. I'm trying to look at the ball and look at where I'm trying to hit it. But we're playing a lot of tennis because most companies, and I found this when I was management for many years at Unilever, we're focused on the competition. We're just looking at what the other guy's doing. If the other guy moves left, we move left. And so we're not really paying attention to subtle changes, perhaps as in the game of golf, in the wind or the terrain. We're just focusing on the person right in front of us. And most disruption doesn't happen. Pepsi is not getting disrupted by Coke. P&G is not getting disrupted by Unilever. The disruption comes in from the side, comes in from a little bit of your peripheral vision. So everyone talks about having a vision. More companies need to focus on getting their peripheral vision better than what's right in front of their nose.
So what are the obstacles that generally you see? Do you have some success stories or some cautionary tales?
Well, yeah, another obstacle that most companies face is what we call the golden handcuffs, that any new idea they have, any new direction they want to take their business is going to be less profitable than their current business today. And, you know, Wall Street likes maximum return every quarter. So if they want to build a new business, it's often going to be needing to push back on the Wall Street, the golden handcuffs of Wall Street. So if you can get out of the short-term thinking, that certainly helps. Another business strategy that helps is realizing that famous Bill Marriott quote, success is never final. Oftentimes people get their business humming and then they sit back and go, that's it, I've done it. And, you know, sure enough, pretty quickly after that, they find themselves in trouble.
How important is it when this shifting is taking place to have credibility and focus? I would imagine that those two are pretty hard to do in a situation like this.
Yeah, if you're going to try to if you're going to try to shift an organization ahead, and you have to do that every day, as you just said, focus is critical. You know, when we spoke to many, many leaders of companies that were successful, in fact, Brian Golden, the CEO of Hasbro, he talked about they had so many product lines, so many things. He just had to focus on the top seven and really. Yes, he'd like to keep every product in the market doing well, but focusing on the most important challenges and obstacles, because in the end, the other key criteria for success is both focus and then executing brilliantly. And if you're doing 10 things, it's unlikely you can execute as well as if you're doing three. So the successful organizations invariably had this success is never final attitude, as well as their ability to focus on the mission-critical things. Do two things and do them really well rather than try to fix all five things at once.
I know in your book you talk a lot about having the skill set. The organization has to have the skill set. How much of that is the individuals that make up the organization? Can any organization of individuals do this, or does it take a special set of people, too?
Well, we often talk about lots of organizations want to do many things, but they don't have the talent inside to do it. We dug back into the Kodak story a little bit, and everyone thought about Kodak saying, well, they didn't see the digital revolution coming. Well, they saw it pretty clearly. In fact, they saw it phenomenally well. Their projections were 5 years ahead of the cliff. They saw it coming. But they wanted to be a digital company, but their DNA, they were a chemical and sales company. And they didn't bring in enough of the right talent fast enough, as well as many other factors, to save that terrific brand. So looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, what are our real strengths? And first try to play to those. If you're FedEx, your strength is about getting it done. Play to those first. And if you need to make a shift to a new direction, then make sure you first get the talent in, and don't just tell your team, well, you've never been very good at this, but tomorrow you will be. Because unfortunately, tomorrow they may not be.
Is there also the hard choice of having to let some folks go, perhaps, that don't share the vision or can't execute it properly?
Yeah, it is always a difficult choice. We spoke to the founder, speaking of Earth Day yesterday, of Conservation International, a terrific nonprofit. And about 5 years ago, the founder said, well, our purpose is of trying to protect everything is terrific, but it's really not the right purpose. We need to embrace the communities around the areas we're trying to protect and make sure they're working symbiotically. And half the board said, no, we're about protecting. We're not going to embrace organizations and companies, and they're the enemy. And so lots of people left the board of Conservation International. Lots of people departed. But if you looked at the Apple trade-in program, which launched on Earth Day, and anytime you bring a product back to Apple this month, they're making a donation to Conservation International. It's an example of how 10 years ago, Conservation International would never have partnered with a big organization like Apple. They were involved in focusing all their efforts in protecting areas, and they realized to protect the planet, they need to partner with business.
John,
in their purpose.
Yeah, John, you've mentioned a couple of companies this morning in our conversation: Kodak, Procter & Gamble. What are some other examples that you can share with us?
Well, lots of companies. Toys. When you read the press, whether it's Toys R Us or Barnes & Noble, lots of those organizations have been trying to shift for years. And another challenge is by the time they try to shift, they're out of gas. They have no fuel. Toys R Us, was procrastinating between do they want to be a high-end toy store or compete with Walmart. And they spent so long procrastinating, by the time they decided that they knew what they wanted to do, they were out of gas. So analysis paralysis was Toys R Us, perhaps even Barnes & Noble. So lots of companies wait too long or get stuck in analysis paralysis, because when you figure out which way to shift, it's never a sure bet. It's always risky. And companies, by definition, struggle with risk. They try to eliminate it. And entrepreneurs, when you speak to them who've shifted companies and leaders, you need to get comfortable with, figuring out what's going to happen tomorrow is not as easy as doing what you've done yesterday.
Alan, very good of you to be with us this morning. The book, again, is called Shift Ahead, How the Best Companies Stay Relevant in a Fast-Changing World. A wonderful book, and we appreciate your time this morning.
Enjoyed it. Thank you very much for having me, Steve.
All right, great. Again, the book, Shift Ahead, How the Best Companies Stay Relevant in a Fast-Changing World. Alan Adamson is the author, also the co-founder and managing partner of Metaphors, with us this morning here on The Opening Bell.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, the Dow futures off about 12 points this morning as we head to The Opening Bell at 8:30 Chicago time this morning. S&P and NASDAQ futures are lower as well. Markets generally are mixed around the globe, mixed to lower this morning, with markets in London and Tokyo off this morning. Let's now check the latest in agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We'll begin this trading week with focus on two areas. The cattle on feed report that was released Friday after the market closed. And, of course, weather. Will we ever get soil temperatures to 50 degrees so that we can get underway with planting? And this afternoon, we'll get the weekly crop progress reports from the USDA. Traders will be wondering about that report as they trade today. But going back to last Friday, the cattle on feed report showed that as of April 1st, we had 9% more cattle on feed than a year ago. The trade was looking for a 7.5% increase. Number of cattle placed on feed in March, down 9% from a year ago. And the number of cattle marketed in March, down 4% from a year ago. So we'll have to watch the market on that one. As far as weather is concerned, at least I don't think there were any snowstorms over the weekend across the major Corn Belt. But again, those soil temperatures now are of concern because last week in Illinois and Iowa, they ranged anywhere from the upper 30s to the low 40s. And corn planters like to see at least 50-degree soil temperature. So we'll wait with interest for the afternoon crop progress reports. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of stories before we leave you this morning. The average price of a regular gallon of gasoline spiked about 9 cents over the past 2 weeks, now at $2.83. That's according to industry analyst Trilby Lundberg. The price driven up primarily by rising crude oil cost. Current gas price is about 37 cents above where it was a year ago. The biggest global auto show of the year showcases China's ambitions to become a leader in electric cars and the industry's multi-billion dollar scramble to roll out models that appeal to price-conscious but demanding Chinese drivers. Auto China 2018 opens this week following Beijing's decision to allow full foreign ownership of Chinese automakers in a move to make the industry more flexible as it promotes electrics, including some electrics from the United States. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, April 23rd. The National Association of Realtors releases its report on existing home sales for March today. It's also a big day for earnings. Among the companies reporting quarterly earnings, Alaska Air, Halliburton, Hasbro, Kimberly-Clark, Phillips, also, Alphabet, the owner of Google, Sally Mae, TD Ameritrade, TCF Financial Corporation, and Whirlpool. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, April the 23rd.